First, it's the week in Washington with a look at some of the week's top national political stories. Attorney General William Barr made an appearance yesterday on Capitol Hill facing a barrage of questions, mainly from Democrats, about his and the administration's handling of protests around the country, coronavirus, and parts of the Russia Mueller investigation. Barr and Republicans pushed back, saying that federal agents have been lawfully required to protect federal property in states and cities where Democratic leadership didn't do enough to look after that property. You can join in on that topic at 800-642-1234. Did you watch or hear any of the Barr hearing yesterday? What thoughts did you have? And what do you think about the use of federal law enforcement agents in American cities in response to protests? Should they be there or not? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@WPR.org. Tolu Olorunipa is the White House reporter for The Washington Post. Tolu, welcome back to Central Time.
Hey, Rob.
Well, let's start with that testimony from the Attorney General yesterday in front of the House Judiciary Committee. Set us up with kind of the tone of this whole thing.
Well, this was a long-awaited hearing in that Attorney General Barr has been Attorney General for more than a year and a half, and he had not sat before the House Judiciary Committee all year. They've been trying to get him since last year, and you know, for whatever reason, they hadn't been able to get him. And it was long expected to be a contentious hearing. In previous hearings, Barr has been very flippant with some of the lawmakers. He's been unwilling to give them what they want. He has, in some cases, in the words of some of the lawmakers, been rude and pompous towards them, and that was expected. And Democratic lawmakers who run this committee were, you know, were sort of expecting that from Barr, and then they sort of used their powers as congressmen and congresswomen to cut him off from time to time when they thought maybe he wasn't answering their questions, or he was obfuscating, or he was trying to score political points. They would say, you know, reclaiming my time, and they would cut him off. And that's really how this whole hearing went. There are a lot of issues on which the Democrats and the Republicans are very far apart, ranging from Barr's handling of the Mueller investigation to how Barr treated some of President Trump's allies who got lighter sentences than they might have if they were not allies of the president, to how he's handled some of these protests and cracking down on peaceful protesters both in Washington, D.C. and other places across the country, using federal forces to do so. So there was a lot of areas of disagreement, and for that reason, the hearing was very contentious, and there were a lot of sparks flying for the entire course of the hearing, which lasted several hours.
Let's dive into one of those many points of agreement. Here's Democratic Representative Pramila Jayapal from Washington State. She'd been accusing the attorney general of an excessive use of force against protesters in Lafayette Park as compared to protests in Michigan's capital around opening the state back up. Here's a listen.
You take an aggressive approach to Black Lives Matter protests, but not to right-wing extremists threatening to lynch a governor if it's for the president's benefit. Did I get it right, Mr. Barr?
I have responsibility for the federal government, and the White House is the seat of the executive
branch. Mr. Barr, let me
just
make it clear: you are supposed to represent
authorities
the
can
people
handle,
of the United States of America, not violate people's First Amendment rights. You are supposed to uphold democracy and secure equal justice under the law, not violently dismantle certain protesters based on the president's personal agenda.
Gentlelady's time is expired.
So a lot of disagreement there. Republicans on the committee had backed up how the attorney general and the president had handled protests. Talk a little more about this issue and some of the back and forth we heard.
Yeah, the two parties are very far apart on this issue of these protests. Republicans wanted to drive home this idea that Democrats wanted to defund the police, and that Barr and the Trump administration were standing up for law and order, and that all that they were doing and trying to contain and control these protests were to make sure that people were not being victimized, that businesses were not being vandalized, that federal property was not being, you know, destroyed or decimated. On the other side, we had Democrats who said this was a clear violation of Americans' constitutional rights to freedom of assembly, freedom of speech, the ability to, you know, go about their lives and protest their government without being attacked by in many cases, unmarked federal officials who did not identify themselves, who were operating under sort of a hard-to-understand or hard-to-define command and control structure. And they pressed him pretty hard, especially looking at the difference between how some of the protests that took place in several states, like Michigan, over the shutdowns in April and May, how some of those protests were unruly and did include people who had arms and who essentially shut down the Michigan State House because they were going in with guns. And the federal response to that was very muted. President Trump actually sort of egged on those protesters, saying, you know, Michigan needed to be liberated. But when the protests shifted to issues of police violence, issues of police brutality, racial injustice, then President Trump and his Justice Department decided to crack down and send in their forces to, you know, essentially try to quash some of these protests. So you heard Democrats make a lot of hay about that, especially about that June 1st photo op where the president walked across Lafayette Square after federal agents had used pepper spray and tear gas on peaceful protesters to clear the park right across the street from the White House. And then minutes later, the president walked over to a church for a photo op holding a Bible. Attorney General Barr was very much involved in that. He directed much of that, and he was brought to task during the hearing for his role in that process. And he tried to defend himself and say that it wasn't because of the photo op that, you know, the protesters were dispersed. But he faced a lot of tough questioning on that issue specifically.
So our weekly look at some of the top stories in national politics. Tolu Olorunipa is with us from The Washington Post. He covers the White House right now, talking about Attorney General William Barr testifying before the House Judiciary Committee. You can join in at 800-642-1234. One of the big issues there, the use of federal law enforcement agents from various Homeland Security agencies against protesters, vandals in cities, especially Portland, Seattle, and elsewhere, it looks like. You can join in with your reactions to that. 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Tolu, as you mentioned, another issue that came up here had to do with the Mueller probe, Roger Stone, Michael Flynn. Going back to the impeachment hearings, Russia, Barr was accused of making decisions or getting involved in these cases. Want to give a listen to the Attorney General being questioned here by Democratic Representative Eric Swalwell from California.
The prosecutors wanted me to play Judas. I refused. Are you familiar with that Stone statement?
Actually, I'm not.
So how can you sit here and tell us why should I investigate the President of the United States if you're not even aware of the facts concerning the President using the pardon or commutation power to swap the silence of a witness?
Because we require a reliable predicate before we open a criminal investigation.
And I just gave you, sir.
I don't consider it. I consider it a very Rube Goldberg theory that you have.
Well, it sounds like you're hearing this evidence
and
for the
by
first
the way,
time
if
today.
I applied, if I applied this standard, there'd be a lot more people under investigation.
And so they're referring there to the commutation of Roger Stone's sentence after he had said, in effect, I didn't roll over on the president. Was this a big part of yesterday's hearings, Tolu?
It did become a big part of the hearings because the lawmakers wanted to, especially on the Democratic side, wanted to question how the Justice Department handled some of these investigations that involved friends and allies of the president. It did appear that Barr interfered in a number of these cases, specifically for Roger Stone, where the line prosecutors wanted to recommend a sentence of 7 to 9 years for his several, felony counts of witness tampering, obstructing justice, lying to Congress. They said that was within the guidelines. President Trump tweeted about it when he heard about it. He said that was a disgrace. And lo and behold, hours later, Attorney General Barr pulled that recommendation and essentially said that he would not stand by that recommendation and that a lower recommendation for a shorter sentence was warranted. And the Justice Department under Barr also moved to drop charges against Michael Flynn, who had pleaded guilty twice to lying to investigators. And those are both allies of the president who were involved in his 2016 campaign. So he faced a lot of questions over why the Justice Department appeared to be interfering in a way that benefited the president's friends and allies and did not make it seem like everyone was equal in the eyes of the law. And he faced pretty tough questions from the Democrats about that. He faced questions from Republicans who essentially tried to back up the president's claims that his campaign was the victim of a spying campaign and that the Justice Department and the FBI was, arrayed against the president's campaign in 2016 and tried to take him down. And some Republicans wanted him, wanted Barr and the Justice Department to be tougher on that issue, even though there's not really a lot of evidence to back up those claims, those sort of conspiratorial claims about a broad spying conspiracy against the Trump campaign. But it seems like even though we're 4 years past the 2016 campaign, we are still talking about allegations and in some cases, you know, convicted crimes that happened in the course of the 2016 campaign.
We're talking with Washington Post White House reporter Tolu Olorunipa. It's the Week in Washington. We're looking at some of the week's top stories in national politics. You can join in at 800-642-1234. If you'd like, coming up, we'll look at Senate Republicans advancing a plan for another round of coronavirus relief, different than the House Democrat plan. Of course, we'll get the latest and find out how far they are apart. You can join in with your hopes on that at 800-642-1234. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our talk with Washington Post White House reporter Tolu Olorunipa, looking at some of the top stories in national politics. Tolu, this long-running saga now of if there's going to be a new round from Congress of coronavirus economic relief, a new chapter now, Senate Republicans releasing what they want to do. What are we seeing there?
Right now we see not much that looks anything like a deal. People have essentially run up to the deadline in which they're losing their added unemployment benefits. That is a key sticking point, that extra $600 that unemployed Americans were receiving. That expires in a matter of hours, and there's no deal right now between the Republicans and Democrats about what to do about that or other issues. Now, the Republicans did roll out their bill earlier this week. Essentially, they're calling for a reduction in unemployment benefits, taking it down from that $600 federal enhancement down to $200 for the next couple of months, and then a formula after that based on what people were earning before they were unemployed. Democrats are saying that's a non-starter. They say that Americans need much more money to keep the bills paid, keep a roof over their heads. Republicans also want things like liability protection, something that the Democrats aren't too happy about. There are some areas where the two sides are in agreement. Both sides want to continue giving another round of $1,200 stimulus payments to Americans like they did back in March. Both sides want to make sure that there's money for schools to reopen, for schools to have extra funding so that they can reopen safely. Democrats want money for state and local governments. Republicans did not put any money in there. And there are a couple of other issues in the Republican bill that are just sort of head-scratching and confusing because they don't seem to be related in any way to the coronavirus pandemic. There was $1.75 billion in there for an FBI building that it happens to be across the street from President Trump's hotel in Washington. There's not a lot of support for renovating that building there. There was a push to have it moved to another location. But by having it kept there, if this bill were to pass as is, President Trump would be able to, you know, have a nice, beautiful new building next to his hotel and also keep out other hotels or other competition from there. So how that got snuck into the bill, even some Republicans aren't sure and don't seem to be defending it. But that is one of the reasons why we are so far apart from a deal, is because both sides have very different versions of what they think the country needs in this final bill, what is likely to be the final bill before the August recess and full-blown campaigning starts. And right now the negotiations are happening, but there doesn't seem to be a lot of movement.
Is there any thought, and I think everybody's trying to avoid this, but a thought that there would just be hey, we're going to boost unemployment benefits, at least some portion of them, and that's it? We're just going to take a clean vote on something like that?
Well, earlier on, that there was a lot of opposition to that on both sides. They did not want a piecemeal approach. They wanted to try to get everything done at once. But it seems that now that the talks are breaking down and there's not a lot of movement and progress, and the deadline is fast approaching, it does seem like that may be an option that both sides can get along with. Republicans, a large number of Republicans, are still against the idea of giving people an extra $600. But I think if it were put up for a vote, today, it would be likely that it would pass just because, you know, people don't want to be in an election year seen as the votes who took away, you know, a lifeline from tens of millions of Americans who are, you know, right now relying on this extra money. But I do think that that is more likely now than it was even 48 hours ago, just because they had thought they would be able to come up with some kind of a negotiation, but then the negotiations are largely stalled. And if it's going to be several weeks before they can come up with a bill, that is out of sync with the timeline for these unemployment benefits, which are essentially expiring as we speak.
Talking to Tolu Olorunipa from The Washington Post, it's our weekly look at the top stories in national news. Well, a big story under the radar, Tolu, this presidential election that seems to be going on. I understand you are in the midst of taking a look at some of the latest polling. What and where do you have your eye on?
Well, all across the country, we're looking at national polls. We're looking at swing states. Wisconsin is a hugely important swing state. Obviously, Michigan and Pennsylvania are also going to be important. North Carolina, Arizona, and Florida are the other three that we're looking very closely at. One thing I've been talking to some Trump campaign officials about is that they don't believe the polls. Right now, all the polls show Biden, former Vice President Joe Biden, beating President Trump pretty handily in a large number of these swing states and up double digits nationally. What we're hearing from the Trump campaign is that they believe that there is a hidden Trump vote out there, specifically in places like Wisconsin, where pollsters aren't really capturing the energy behind the Trump supporters, the people who are enthusiastically supporting the president, who may be not speaking to pollsters about it, who maybe not even telling their family, but when they get into the voting booth, they will support and vote for the president. So we have seen an enthusiasm gap in which people who are voting for President Trump are more enthusiastic about it. People who are voting for Vice President Biden are not as enthusiastic about voting for Biden, but they are pretty enthusiastic about voting against Trump. So it's been very interesting to see how that dynamic has played out. President Trump yesterday was talking about his approval ratings yesterday and sort of lamenting the fact that he does not have very high approval rating for his handling of the coronavirus. And he essentially just said, you know, it must be because of my personality. And that is what we're seeing in some of the polling, is that, you know, the American people do not like the chaos. They do not like sort of the bully type personality, the reality star in the White House. They may have been able to tolerate it before, but now that we're in the midst of very serious crises with a pandemic and with an economic downturn, we've seen the president's numbers go down because, you know, voters are not supporting how he's been handling this situation.
I want to take our last couple of minutes on a story you covered last week, Tolu, and now there's an update today. You'd written about the president tweeting, targeting, in his words, suburban housewives of America, talking about Joe Biden, he says, is a threat to the suburbs. And then today, the president saying he's getting rid of an Obama-era housing discrimination requirement. I'm going to quote from the pair of tweets here. I'm happy to inform all of the people living their suburban lifestyle dream that you will no longer be bothered or financially hurt by having low-income housing built in your neighborhood. Your housing prices will go up based on the market, and crime will go down. I have rescinded the Obama-Biden AFFH rule. Enjoy. End quote there. Tolu, what's going on?
Yeah, this is a very clear election year ploy. The president thinks, president sees the numbers that show him losing in the suburbs. This is a very key part of the electorate who has traditionally gone with the Republicans. 4 years ago, went with the Republicans. Now they seem to be trending away from the president. So he has sort of doubled down on this approach that he's going to focus on suburban housing. And what are pretty thinly veiled racial code words about, you know, suburban housewives and low-income housing, essentially saying that he does not want, you know, minorities in low-income apartments moving into the suburbs. And he's going to protect the suburbs while Joe Biden is going to destroy the suburbs. I think even earlier this week, he talked about how Cory Booker, the, you know, one of only a few black senators, was going to be in charge of housing in the suburbs, which there's no evidence or no indication that that Cory Booker would be involved in that. But essentially, the president is really reaching for a lot of these dog whistles, and he thinks that's a way that he will be able to appeal to suburban voters, who he's going to need in Wisconsin, in Michigan, in Pennsylvania, if he's going to be able to win. And right now the polls show him behind. And this is his strategy for trying to approach this issue.
In our last, on just under a minute, Tolu, what are you watching for in the week to come?
I'll be watching very closely how the rest of the country responds to the coronavirus. We have seen the baseball that's tried to come back, and then there was an outbreak with the Marlins. Basketball is supposed to be coming back. Schools are supposed to be reopening, but we still see this virus as an impediment to all of that. And there are a number of different signals that we'll be watching for over the next week to see if the positivity rate starts to decrease, or if we stay at this level, it'll be hard to see any kind of return to normal, and that can impact the election in November.
Tolu, thanks again for joining us today.
You got it. Thank you.
We've been talking to Tolu Olorunipa. He covers the White House for the Washington Post. He joined us again this week for our roundup of some of the top stories making news in national politics, including Attorney General William Barr testifying yesterday before the House Judiciary Committee, plus a look at some of the latest presidential polling around the country and more. You can still share some of your thoughts on what the Attorney General had to say yesterday. And if you're paying attention to another story that's been going on today, top technology officials and social media companies, leaders testifying before a congressional committee themselves. We'll be talking about that in the days to come, and you can share your thoughts. Do you think that Congress should be doing more things to regulate some of those technology companies, the Amazons and Googles and Facebooks of the world? If so, what would you like to see change? Email us, ideas@WPR.org, or tweet us on one of those platforms, ideas at Central Time WPR.